was a low-key and daringly adult advertisement in a sea of animated kiddie vid ads selling bubblegum, adventure toys, dolls, action figures, and rival cereals. The ad faded in on a deserted fourth or fifth grade classroom, a scene Saturday morning viewers of the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner Hour and the Drac Pack could readily identify with. The sharp cereal professor was wearing a suit, a V-necked sweater, and a shirt open at the collar. Both in looks and in speech, he was mildly authoritarian. Vic and Roger had talked to some 40 teachers and half a dozen child psychiatrists and had discovered that this was the sort of parental role model that the majority of kids feel most comfortable with, and the sort that so few actually have in their homes. The cereal professor was sitting on a teacher's desk, hinting at some informality. The soul of a real pal hidden somewhere beneath that gray-green tweed, the young viewer might assume. But he spoke slowly and gravely. He did not command. He did not talk down. He did not wheedle. He did not cajole or extol. He spoke to the millions of T-shirted, cereal-slurping, cartoon-watching, Saturday morning viewers as though they were real people. "Good morning, children," the professor said quietly. "This is a commercial for cereal. Listen to me carefully, please. I know a lot about cereals because I'm the Sharp Cereal Professor. Sharp cereals, Twinkles, Cocoa Bears, Brand 16, and Sharp All Grain Blend are the best-tasting cereals in America. And they're good for you." A beat of silence, and then the Sharp Cereal Professor grinned. And when he grinned, you knew there was the soul of a real pal in there. "Believe me, because I know. Your mom knows. I just thought you'd like to know, too." A young man came into the ad at that point, and he handed the Sharp Cereal Professor a bowl of Twinkles or Cocoa Bears or whatever. The Sharp Cereal Professor dug in, then looked straight into every living room in the country and said, "Nope. Nothing wrong here." Old Man Sharp hadn't cared for that last line, or the idea that anything could be wrong with one of his cereals. Eventually, Vic and Roger had worn him down, but not with rational arguments. Making ads was not a rational business. You often did what felt right, but that didn't mean you could understand why it felt right. Both Vic and Roger felt that the professor's final line had a power which was both simple and enormous. Coming from the cereal professor, it was the final total comfort, a complete security blanket. "I'll never hurt you," it implied. In a world where parents get divorced, where older kids sometimes beat the shit out of you for no rational reason, where the rival little league team sometimes racks the crap out of your pitching, where the good guys don't always win like they do on TV, where you don't always get invited to the good birthday party, in a world where so much goes wrong, there will always be Twinkles and Cocoa Bears and All Grain Blend, and they'll always taste good. Nope, nothing wrong here. With a little help from Sharp's son, later on, Roger said, you would have believed the kid thought the ad up and wrote it himself, the cereal professor concept was approved and saturated Saturday morning TV, plus such weekly syndicated programs as Star Blazers, U.S. of Archie, Hogan's Heroes, and Gilligan's Island. Sharp cereals surged even more powerfully than the rest of the Sharp line, and the cereal professor became an American institution. His tagline, "Nope, nothing wrong here," became one of those national catchphrases, meaning roughly the same thing as "stay cool" and "no sweat." When Vic and Roger decided to go their own way, they had observed strict protocol and had not gone to any of their previous clients until their connections with the Ellison Agency were formally and amicably severed. Their first 6 months in Portland had been a scary pressure cooker time for all of them. Vic and Donna's boy, Tad, was only a year old. Donna, who missed New York badly, was by turns sullen, petulant, and just plain scared. Roger had an old ulcer, a battle scar from his years in the Big Apple advertising wars, and when he and Althea lost the baby, the ulcer had flared up again, turning him into a closet Jellusil chugger. Althea bounced back as well as possible under the circumstances, Vic thought. It was Donna who pointed out to him that Placid Althea's single, weak drink before dinner had turned into two before and three after. The two couples had vacationed in Maine separately and together, but neither Vic nor Roger had realized how many doors are initially closed to folks who have moved in, as Mainers say, from out of state. They would indeed have gone under, as Roger pointed out, if Sharp hadn't decided to stay with them. And at the company's Cleveland headquarters, positions had done an ironic flip-flop. Now it was the old man who wanted to stick with Vic and Roger. And it was the kid, by this time 40 years old, who wanted to jettison them, arguing with some logic that it would be madness to hand their account over to a two-bit ad agency 600 miles north of the New York pulse beat. The fact that AdWorks was affiliated with a New York market analysis firm cut zero ice with the kid, as it had cut zero ice with the other firms for which they had put together campaigns in the past few years. If loyalty was toilet paper, Roger had said bitterly, we'd be hard-pressed to wipe our asses, old bunny. But Sharp had come along, providing the margin they had so desperately needed. We made do with an ad agency here in town for 40 years, old man Sharp said, and if those two boys want to move out of that Christless city, they're just showing good old common sense. That was that. The old man had spoken. The kid shut up. And for the last 2.5 years, the cookie sharpshooter had gone on shooting. George and Gracie had gone on eating sharp cakes in their cold water flat. And the sharp cereal professor had gone on telling kids that there was nothing wrong here. Actual spot production was handled by a small independent studio in Boston. The New York market analysis firm went on doing its thing competently. And 3 or 4 times a year, either Vic or Roger flew to Cleveland to confer with Carol Sharp and his kid, said kid now going decidedly gray around the temples. All the rest of the client-agency intercourse was handled by the U.S. Post Office and Ma Bell. The process was perhaps strange, certainly cumbersome, but it seemed to work fine. Then, along came Red Raspberry Zingers. Vic and Roger had known about Zingers for some time, of course, although it had only gone on the general market some 2 months ago, in April of 1980. Most of the sharp cereals were lightly sweetened or not sweetened at all. All grain blend, Sharp's entry in the natural cereal arena, had been quite successful. Red Raspberry Zingers, however, was aimed at a segment of the market with a sweeter tooth, at those prepared cereal eaters who bought such cereals as Count Chocula, Frankenberry, Lucky Charms, and similar pre-sweetened breakfast foods, which were somewhere in the twilight zone between cereal and candy. In the late summer and early fall of 1979, Zingers had been successfully test-marketed in Boise, Idaho, Scranton, Pennsylvania, and in Roger's adopted Maine hometown of Bridgeton. Roger had told Vic, with a shudder, that he wouldn't let the twins near it with a 10-foot pole, although he had been pleased when Althea told him the kids had clamored for it when they saw it shelved at Gagier's Market. It's got more sugar than whole grain in it, and it looks like the side of a fire barn. Vic had nodded and replied innocently enough, with no sense of prophecy. The first time I looked in one of those boxes, I thought it was full of blood. So what do you think? Roger repeated. He had made it halfway through his sandwich as Vic reviewed the dismal train of events in his mind. He was becoming more and more sure that in Cleveland, old man Sharp and his aging kid were looking again to shoot the messenger for the message. Guess we better try. Roger clapped him on the shoulder. My man, he said. Now eat up. But Vic wasn't hungry. The two of them had been invited to Cleveland to attend an emergency meeting that was to be held 3 weeks after the 4th of July. A good many of the Sharp regional sales managers and executives were vacationing, and it would take at least that long to get them all together. One of the items on the agenda had to do directly with AdWorks, an assessment of the association to this point, the letter had said, which meant, Vic assumed, that the kid was using the Zingers debacle to dump them at last. About 3 weeks after Red Raspberry Zingers went national, enthusiastically, if gravely, pitched by the Sharp cereal professor, nope, nothing wrong here. The first mother had taken her little one to the hospital, nearly hysterical and sure the child was bleeding internally. The little girl, victim of nothing more serious than a low-grade virus, had thrown up what her mother had first believed to be a huge amount of blood. Nope, nothing wrong here. That had been in Iowa City, Iowa. The following day, there had been 7 more cases. The day after, 24. In all cases, the parents of children afflicted with vomiting or diarrhea had rushed the kids to the hospital, believing them to be suffering internal bleeding. After that, the cases had skyrocketed, first into the hundreds, then into the thousands. In none of these cases had the vomiting and or diarrhea been caused by the cereal, but that was generally overlooked in the growing furor. Nope, not a single thing wrong here. The cases had spread west to east. The problem was the food dye that gave Zingers its zingy red color. The dye itself was harmless, but that was also mostly overlooked. Something had gone wrong, and instead of assimilating the red dye, the human body simply passed it along. The goofed-up dye had only gotten into one batch of cereal, but it had been a whopper of a batch. A doctor told Vic that if a child who had just died after ingesting a big bowl of red raspberry zingers were the subject of an autopsy, the post-mortem would reveal a digestive tract as red as a stop sign. The effect was strictly temporary, but that had been overlooked, too. Roger wanted them to go down with all guns firing, if they were to go down. He had proposed marathon conferences with the Image Eye people in Boston, who actually did the spots. He wanted to talk with the sharp serial professor himself, who had gotten so